Well, 2.5 years ago, Hurricane Katrina roared across the Gulf of Mexico and did amazingly, unbelievably extensive damage in Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama. And 13 Presbyterians went to do a little bit of what's left to be done, and they were joined by a number of other Presbyterians from the Third Presbyterian Church of Rochester, New York, to do just a little more to restore some more hope to that city. And as we think about seeing today, we're going to begin with a report on what our mission team saw in New Orleans, and David Wells is going to share those words. And while he does, we're going to see a few scenes from New Orleans and from the work there on the wall. David, here's your hammer back.
Yeah, I did have a hammer, and I have the purple thumbnail to prove it. Vacation is defined as the suspension of regular activity and doing things out of the ordinary. Last week, 13 of your friends and fellow members did exactly that in New Orleans. Linda Cook, Bud and Olive Hallett, Karen Hunter, Dave and Sue Murphy, Lou Viarche, Joe Leffelman, Nancy Brothers, Sharon Granda, Bill Moore, Pastor Greg, and I all returned safely yesterday and are wearing our blue vacation t-shirts. Much of New Orleans, as you heard from Greg, remains still in ruins after Hurricane Katrina in 2005. I think most of us were surprised at how few families had returned to their homes in the poorer areas of New Orleans. But we were there to help some of them do exactly that. One of the homeowners, Dora, joined us for dinner one night and shared her story with us. Her faith, courage, and determination not to raise her children in the projects was an inspiration to all of us. We stayed at the First Presbyterian Church of New Orleans with members of two other Presbyterian churches. We did everything from framing walls to finishing bathrooms. Greg even crawled underneath the house with Joe to install plumbing. And you would have been impressed with the Wildwood women's command of power tools. We also managed to take in some great local cuisine and even got a ghost tour in the French Quarter. The experience left all of us a bit changed and more appreciative of God's blessings in our lives. And perhaps we helped Dora get a little closer to her goal of returning to her home. So while our vacation accommodations and activities weren't of the four-star variety, they were extraordinary. And I highly recommend you make your reservations for the 2009 trip, and thank you for your support of One Great Hour of Sharing.
Thank you, David. And there might yet be a trip in the fall of 2009. So if you are interested in that, just mark the pew pad, and we keep a running list of all that are interested in possibly being on a mission trip sometime, and we'll make sure you hear about when they come up, when they arise. Well, we heard what's been seen by our mission team in New Orleans. And when you see things, when you go places, sometimes you just see things a little differently. And that's what happened to the man who was born blind. Not only could he at last see, but he also went through a different kind of a journey in sight. Did you notice, as the story continued, he kept seeing Jesus in a slightly different way. When first his neighbors and friends asked him, "What happened to you? Who did this?" He said, "Well, it was the man called Jesus. That's who gave me my sight." Then the Pharisees, the preachers of the day, called him in and said, "Well, what's going on here? What happened to you? We need to know. This seems to be a God thing. Who did this?" And he says, "Well, it was a prophet. It was a prophet." They called him in again a second time. We want to get to the bottom of this. "What do you say about this Jesus who did this to you?" And he says, "Well, he's a man from God." And that enraged them, and they kicked him out of the synagogue. And then Jesus found him. And after his last discussion with Jesus, did you notice what he said? The man born blind now says, "Lord, I believe." From a man called Jesus to the Lord in whom he believes, that's quite a journey. Quite a journey for one man in one day. And the truth is, we all take a journey like that in our lifetime. We grow up, we hear stories about God, we picture God. You know, the most common one is what? The old man with the white beard and the flowing robes flying around the heavens up there. But your life goes on, you have experiences, your idea of God changes, and it continues to change all through your life. Your understanding of who God is and what the promises of God mean. It becomes real as our lives go on, and God becomes particular and personal to each one of us. And that's part of the life of faith, if we're doing it right, is paying attention and seeing our lives as our understanding of God changes over time. And all of faith is a journey like that. You know, truths that we learn anew. Sometimes they're truths that we've known and sort of know in our heads but forget in our hearts. And this last week had several of those. When you go to a place and you see things like we saw this past week, you can't help but either learn or relearn some very old and very deep truths, such as the fact that where you go, you will find brothers and sisters in faith, those people from Rochester. They were there for the same reason we were, and because we were there for the same purpose and answering the same calling, we were one group from the beginning. We relearned that wonderful truth that when you give is when you receive. When you put yourself out there, when you take a risk, when you do something for someone else, that's the moment, of course, when the return is far greater than anything you give. We were told time and time again how much the church mattered, how maybe the government hadn't come through or what, but it was people from all over the country who have come and keep coming to New Orleans and Mississippi, to the Gulf Coast, that have really made a difference. And if things are changing there, it's largely due to people of faith who are sending their dollars and coming down to make a difference. And we relearned that great truth that people who are on a mission, who answer the calling for a cause like that, are great folks. You know, I think it was the folk singer Pete Seeger who said, you know, when you take on a cause like that, you may not win, but you meet the best people. And that's surely true, that people that who give are the very best people. And there were times when you'd look out at all the incredible need there, the endlessness of the need, and you could be overwhelmed and wonder, this is a drop in the bucket. This is not enough. There are neighborhoods that aren't unbuilt, and you wonder if they should be built. And then you meet Dora, and you meet her five kids, and it's not just a public problem anymore. Now it's personal. Now it's Dora. It's her 15-year-old son. It's her daughters, and it's somehow different. And you remember that God saves the world one person at a time. And that's really what the whole gospel story is about, isn't it? I mean, you know, God sent that message of God's love over and over and over again, but it wasn't until Jesus came and made it personal. Personal in the life of the blind man. Personal in the lives of the couple at the wedding at Cana. Personal in the lives of the man paralyzed, lying on a pallet. The whole point of the gospel is God makes God's love personal and individual and particular, which is why when we carry out our mission, it needs to be personal and individual and particular. And you don't have to go to New Orleans to do that. Each of us has a mission field in our backyard, in our neighborhoods, in our places of work, where we can help out with a dollar, with a shoulder to lean on, with a muscle to lift, with a listening ear, with a compassionate heart, whether you're in your own home or wherever you go. That's the mission field, because all of life is a mission trip. Thanks be to God. Amen.